This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. About this time 8 years ago, America was on its way to making history, electing the first African-American president. Will this be the year the country makes more history? Is America ready to elect its first woman president? The new book by writer-historian Nancy Cohen explores this question in the context of the political history of women in America. The book is Breakthrough of the Making of America's First Woman President. Nancy Cohen, welcome to Stateside.
Happy to be here.
If America puts Hillary Clinton in the Oval Office this coming November, we certainly would be kind of late to the party, wouldn't we? We've got some 50 other nations that got there before us. Why are we so behind other nations?
Exactly. You know, as Americans, we like to think of ourselves as exceptional. But in the case of women's political leadership, we're exceptionally backward. More than 50 nations have elected women to lead them, as you mentioned, Taiwan, Germany, Chile. I mean, we're behind Kosovo and Bangladesh. So the question is, and this is one of the places where I started my book, is why were we so behind? And the most important reason we're behind is that for over 200 years, gender discrimination by law kept women out of politics and kept a woman out of the Oval Office.
It's certainly when the founding fathers were writing about all men being equal, they were not thinking of women, were they?
No. Even though some of the women of their time were talking about women's rights. I mean, it was a debate that was pretty lively in the early years of America. Jefferson said he couldn't imagine appointing a woman to the federal government. It was an innovation he could not imagine. Franklin wrote satirical plays about women getting out of their place. I mean, you can go on and on with the founding fathers. The idea that this was to be a republic governed by the people did not include women in that notion of the people.
And Nancy, as we sit in front of our screens or listen to our radios or read our papers and we follow Hillary Clinton campaigning for the presidency. Now, it is jolting to read the statement in your book, and you say it. Just 30 short years ago, no Republican woman had ever served as governor and no Democratic woman had ever been elected to the Senate in her own right. So it has been quite a 30 years, hasn't it?
Right. I mean, the change in such a short period of time has been really stunning. And I do think that we can credit that change to a number of women themselves who looked at the situation. It was during the time of second wave feminism. So they looked at the situation and they said, if we don't find a way to get women on the inside, this is going to be perpetuated that women are a tiny minority of the government. I mean, as they say in D.C., if you're not at the table, you're on the menu. And that had been true for women and our concerns for most of American history.
And you bring us the story of the dynamo who really began to kind of crack this wide open, and that's Maryland Senator Barbara Mikulski. And it's appalling to revisit the nasty, nasty crack that Senator Pete Domenici made about her throwing her panties at him. Oh!
Yes. So he was referencing some pop star at the time, and he was trying to get a laugh out of an audience that was at an elite gathering that happened to be an all-male gathering, which was not unusual in D.C. at the time. And so the casual sexism of the time, I mean, I would say it's hard to imagine, except we're in the midst of this election where candidates like Donald Trump are revisiting this retrograde, crude sexism in a way that, frankly, I couldn't have imagined happening a year ago.
I'd say most of us, and we are certainly going to be talking about how that election has turned. In your book, you talk to women who made their mark on the national scene, including Michigan's former governor, Jennifer Granholm, and our senior Senator Debbie Stabenow. I'm wondering what did they say in terms of the mountains that they climbed in their careers, and did those differ from their male counterparts?
That's a great question. Governor Granholm particularly wanted to focus on the positive. She describes herself as a big booster of women in politics because in her experience, she really sees that women get things done. As she said, you know, women, we don't want to just thump our chest. We want to get things done. We're pragmatic. So she told me stories about how she worked with Republican women and Democratic women in the Michigan legislature to get legislation accomplished at a time when there was, frankly, divided government in the state. So we see this in what Senator Sabinal is doing right now on the water crisis in Flint. She is absolutely the one in the Senate who is really championing and pushing legislation to try to get some money in to fix the problem and to take care of all the health needs of the people that have been poisoned by the water in Flint.
I'm talking with Nancy L. Cohen, historian whose new book is Breakthrough, The Making of America's First Woman President. And in your book, Nancy, you make the point that you believe the myth about the double standard for women is just that, a myth. Why do you say so?
This question about sexism politics was one of the most surprising things I came across in my research. Now, as we've already said, the sexism in this election is obvious. It's absurd. It's outrageous. No one would deny that women in politics, like women everywhere, face acts of everyday sexism. But the surprising news is that women don't lose elections because of sexism. Voters aren't making their decision based on gender. They care a lot more about party and ideology, even issues. They're thinking about the economy. They're thinking about national security. So in all this, there's not much room to let sexist attitudes come in and affect your vote. We also know from public opinion polling that the overwhelming majority of Americans, you know, pushing over 90%, really do believe in gender equality. They really do believe that women should have equal roles in politics. So at this point, I really think we're at a point, and this is something that Governor Granholm made herself, is that Hillary Clinton, for example, her gender is probably a net positive, that there is excitement and enthusiasm of us finally getting to the place where we can elect a woman president. And that is going to far overwhelm whatever small numbers of voters still can't stomach the idea of women's leadership.
Fair enough. Now, Nancy, let's get into where things are right now as you and I talk in spring of 2016. I know as you were working on this book a year ago and you write of the excited crowds of young women, college students lining up for hours to meet Hillary Clinton, talking about how awesome she is and she's their idol. And then, as we saw here in Michigan in March, and not only in Michigan, a lot of these young voters and these young women are feeling the burn. They helped give Senator Bernie Sanders a win here in our state. Why do you think Hillary Clinton's having trouble now connecting with many, not all, but many young voters and young women?
That is the big question for the Clinton campaign, and I don't know that they have quite figured this out. I see that young voters, particularly among white voters in certain states, are pretty progressive. And at the moment, they see Sanders as the more progressive candidate. I don't think for most of them, at least for most of the women, it's an opposition to Clinton. I think it's a preference for Sanders. So the positive thing for Clinton, I think, is that it has allowed her to express what I am convinced is her more essential progressive views that were frankly not in line with the country back in the 90s. So even though she seems like the less progressive candidate in this election, I think the progressive movement of the Democratic Party is bringing her to a place where she would prefer to govern.
Well, let's talk about overall. I just checked HuffPost pollster that keeps track of favorability polls. At the end of March, Hillary Clinton's unfavorable rating is 54.7%. And I think that if Donald Trump's unfavorable rating wasn't over 63%, we'd be talking a lot more about Hillary's unfavorable rating. And I'm just wondering, why is this happening? I mean, doesn't it kind of seem that actually a lot of Americans in both parties are kind of holding their noses as they think about who they might vote for this fall?
I think this is the kind of thing that you see in contested elections. A good part of that 54% are Republicans who have never thought favorably of Hillary Clinton, and they certainly won't think favorably of Bernie Sanders if he wins the nomination. We have an incredibly divided country, almost down the middle, with the Democrats, frankly, having the balance of the advantage. So Hillary Clinton has been in politics for a couple decades. You know, in many ways, it's hard to imagine our first serious woman presidential candidate being anyone but someone who had really established herself in politics. She has had lots, you know, as she said, the vast right-wing conspiracy, whether you believe that or not. But we do know that Republicans and conservatives have been after her for decades, and virtually none of the attacks have stuck. The Sanders campaign is, smartly, playing on those suspicions of her trustworthiness.
That Clinton baggage, as it's called. Yeah.
I mean, if you're trying to beat a Clinton, the best way to beat a Clinton is to see if any of that Clinton baggage can be picked up by voters again.
Now, your book was also written before Donald Trump became such an apparently Teflon-armored GOP candidate for president. And as you alluded to earlier in our conversation, it seems to have kicked right back decades as far as talk about women, things that are said about women. So let's look ahead to the fall, and let us say it is Hillary Clinton against Donald Trump. Will those things that we've heard from Donald Trump, do you think, convince enough women that whatever the party, I can't go for that, I have to vote for Hillary?
I think, one, it's certainly going to mobilize Democratic voters. And we see from very recent polls that there is a huge gender gap of women really, really disliking Trump. And that includes Republican women as well. So, you know, in Republican circles, you see this in news reports. People are talking about whether Republican women themselves might vote for Trump. So Trump seems to be Teflon within the Republican primary, where his opponents can't go full throttle against him because they are concerned about alienating the Republican base. I think it will be very different in a general election. It will be very ugly. Trump clearly will have no compunction about throwing whatever rumor he can dig up against Clinton. I think she's shown that she's a pretty resilient candidate and can take it. And there's also kind of research that shows that attack ads and attacks tend to backfire against women more than they backfire against men. Because, you know, back to this question of sexism, I think there's more outrage when a woman is treated in sexist ways than there is support for that sexist treatment.
So what do you think America might decide in November? Are we ready to cross an historic threshold?
Absolutely. We are ready to cross a historic threshold. I do think it would be transformational in so many ways for America to elect a woman president and for a woman to be at the head of that table, for the message it sends to the world, for the message it would send to young women, and also for what a woman would get done differently than a man might. Whether Hillary Clinton will win or not, I can't predict. I don't think anyone can predict. But we can say with confidence that our country is ready to elect a woman president.
The book is Breakthrough, The Making of America's First Woman President, from historian Nancy L. Cohen. It was great to talk with you, Nancy. Thank you so much for spending time with us.
Thank you, Cindy. It was great to be here.